Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. It should be an interesting show. We're going to cover part of President Bush's funeral, most notably when President Bush Jr. speaks. That'll come up. The service is running a little bit late today. So at some point, we will take you to that coverage.
I think it'll be around 11, maybe a little after.
Somewhere in there? Yeah. All right. We're all monitoring it.
He is... George W. is going to have a tough time getting through this.
Oh, he's talked about how difficult this is going to be for him, and I don't doubt it. It's really tough.
Such a unique relationship.
Yeah.
Really sad.
And you didn't speak at your mom's service, did you?
No, you know what's weird is I speak for a living. I always have. I like getting up in front of people. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I should have done a send-off. I just wanted to be a pallbearer because I thought she carried me my whole life. It's a time that I carry her to the end. So I was a pallbearer the only time I ever was and ever will be.
Oh, really?
And casket's pretty heavy.
I think that's why they traditionally have six, because it is very, very heavy. You're right.
But yeah,
they didn't have you do it by yourself, did they? Or five others, I hope?
Yes.
All right, good.
Yes, but I just wanted to, you know, I haven't seen many women pallbearers. This was 21 years ago.
It's becoming more. Yeah, it's more common now than ever before.
My girlfriend did it for her dad. It was it's just a way to do it. And I'm kind of surprised I didn't speak at my mom's funeral.
I am too. I'm very surprised. Did your sister?
No, my brother didn't either. No.
But you know what? There's something when people always expect you to speak that makes it worse too.
I guess you're right, Steve.
Which I don't like doing.
You know, I recently spoke at my mom's about 6 months ago. Yeah, and I said I will only do it if my sister does it with me, because there were seven of us, and you know, a lot of people did not want to do it, and I was like, well, you know what, if I have support, and it worked out well because we were both there together, you know, and supported each other if one
makes it a little easier.
Well, not really, but you know, it was tough. It was tough, but I figured, you know, I owe my mom that much. There were things I wanted to say.
Yeah,
and, you know. It was very, very interesting.
That might be the hardest part is when you sit down to write it, because you say, I have to summarize a person's entire existence in just a couple of moments worth of words, and that's impossible to do.
Not in 93 years, how do you do that? I mean, we got feedback from everybody. You know, everybody gave us some ideas and stuff, and then we, you know, read it to everybody beforehand to see. Mm. So.
Now I'm feeling regretful that I didn't do it.
Oh, don't.
I do.
No, Wendy. No,
you can't, because it's one of those things where if it feels right at the moment, then you should definitely do it. I did it and barely got through it. It was very, very tough for my mom's service, you know, and I wanted it to be, you know, moving and funny and poignant, everything at the same time.
Can I interrupt? We're coming upon a moment here. Former President Bush just made his way to the front of the cathedral, and he is now greeting by hand each of his former presidents and former first ladies as he's sort of reaching over the pew and now walking down, talking to Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Jimmy Carter,
and
Mrs. Carter, Roslyn as well. It's a question, because when President Trump came in, he did not do that, and it wasn't clear to me, you know, what would be the appropriate thing to sort of work the line or to remain somber and go to your seat. Former President Bush, not his son Jeb, but former President Bush taking an opportunity to greet each of the former presidents and now his father's casket about to be brought into the National Cathedral.
He is seated, President George Bush Jr. is seated in a row exactly adjacent to the row that contains all of the former presidents and their wives.
Right. The former presidents are in the front row, sort of stage facing right, and the Bushes are on the other side.
Yeah. Steve, was I reading this properly yesterday, that this is the first time that all of these presidents, including the current president, have been gathered together? The last time at Barbara Bush's funeral, the president was not present.
Right, his wife. Melania Trump went. Yeah. So I suspect that's the case, yes.
Senator Bob Dole, I can't get that vision out of my head.
From
when
yesterday?
He said, that was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Saluting the casket. It was...
I want to say he's 95 years old at this point.
He is 95.
95, yes.
And, you know, and they were certainly party members, but remember, they were rivals.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
They were political rivals.
Big time. It was a beautiful moment.
Right. So if there's ever a time to put any differences aside, it's a situation like this.
Well, I think they put things aside a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it's just not as if they were long-lost friends for all of their lives. Shared a lot of common events, you know, World War II, both wounded badly in World War II.
Yeah.
And it was a breathtaking American moment to see that yesterday.
I remember during the services for Senator McCain a very short time ago, so many people coming out and saying, you know, he and I disagreed about almost everything or nearly everything, and yet somehow we remained friends. That's so encouraging to hear at such turbulent political times that that's possible.
But that was the old way. We need to get back to that old way.
Yeah.
Because now, I mean, friendships have broken up over the current political climate.
Sure.
That should not happen.
Yeah. I know. All right. We will keep you posted on what's going on at the service for President George Bush. That's coming up throughout the day, and then plenty of other things. So we sure hope you'll stick around. It should be a pretty good show. Bill F., it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us at any point during today's show or shows in the future, too, 312-981-7200. That's our call line. That's our text line. They're one and the same, 312-981-7200.
We are hoping to reschedule Dick Portillo. He was going to be on with us at 10:30, and we rescheduled him just because we did not know when George W. was going to speak. We just didn't know what was going to happen with the funeral of George Herbert Walker Bush.
Mm-hmm.
They had a nice little write-up in the Tribune about what he's doing now, because he sold Portillo's.
Yeah.
And he's just relaxing in Florida, spending time on his boat and with his grandchildren. And today it just came out that Portillo's is named the best fast casual restaurant in the nation, named by TripAdvisor.
Wow.
This news came out today.
In the whole country.
Yep.
That's fantastic. They're not just Chicago anymore, right?
They have
other locations all over. Good for him.
And it all started with just a little doggy stand.
Yeah.
The Doghouse in Villa Park, Illinois.
I have to ask him, because the theme of different Portillo's restaurants, we are rescheduling him, the theme is very different. Sometimes you get one that has kind of a 50s vibe to it. Sometimes there's some that are like an old Western kind of a theme. And sometimes they're like spaceships. You ever go to one of those?
There's
a couple of those that where you're like in Lost in Space having a corn dog.
Yeah, TripAdvisor named Portillo's the nation's best fast casual restaurant. In its annual restaurant rankings, three other Chicago eateries earned high marks in different categories, but Portillo's hot dogs, Italian beef, and chocolate cake overtook fast casual juggernauts like Shake Shack, Five Guys, and Blaze Pizza.
Oh. Sometimes I go to Portillo's because I have a craving for one of their fine sandwiches, and sometimes I go just because I want to see a picture of Jim Belushi. I've never been in a Portillo's where there's not a picture of Jim Belushi greeting you as you come in. I don't know if he's there all the time carefully placing these photographs. I have no idea what goes on behind the scenes.
Despite
but I just know that if I need to see a picture of Jim Belushi, that's where I'm heading.
Despite that, they're still ranked number one.
No, because of that.
Yeah.
I think that's what put him over the hump. Speaking of humps, Wendy, they announced the new host for the Academy Awards.
I thought of you immediately. And so Steve Cochran Show, they were talking to Dean this morning, and Dean mentioned to the world that how much you hate him.
Oh, I don't hate him.
You hate him.
No.
You're jealous of him.
No, I'm
not.
You
don't get it.
I don't get him. That's the difference. I don't hate him. I wish him well.
No, you
I
don't. Want,
no, I do.
No, you don't.
I swear I do.
You've never said one nice thing about him.
But I don't have anything to gain in him not doing well. I want him to be
no,
funny.
No, you don't.
I do, the box that deserves the circle around it is I don't get him. And honestly,
you're too old.
I hate
to offend you, but you're not his target demo.
There's people older than me who love him. I don't think it's No. They're all imaginary friends of mine. I read an article yesterday talking about how hard it is right now to get a host for the Academy Awards. Now, for decades, that was by far the most sought-after job. If you did comedy, that's the job you wanted, to host the Academy Awards, because you were front and center. Everybody was watching you. All eyes are on you. It's a recipe for fame and fortune to host the Academy Awards. It was done more often than anybody by Bob Hope. Johnny Carson did it a bunch of times. You know, Billy Crystal did it a bunch of times. And for my money, was the best that's ever been for hosting the Academy Awards.
He did great. I'm not the hugest Billy Crystal fan. I know that's terrible.
But even if you're not a huge
Billy Crystal fan,
for the Academy Awards, he kept the show moving. It was always a great opening. He did songs at the beginning. He was very talented. He's just talented. So the article yesterday talked about how impossible it is now to get anybody to do this because the commitment is so great to host the Academy Awards. Even though it's only on for one night, it's weeks and weeks and weeks of work. They said the money's not great. They said you only get paid in the low six figures, which probably means between $200,000 and $300,000.
That's not a lot.
Not to guys. When you think about the pool of talent that they're looking at to host the show... So it was Jimmy Kimmel the last couple of years. It was Chris Rock. It was Ellen DeGeneres. Those guys are all multi-millionaires. So to throw them, this sounds awful, but
they didn't do it for the money.
But yeah. It also is a job that seems like with more risk than reward.
Yes. I mean, especially now.
Yes.
Because social media is there to ridicule you.
Immediately.
The second,
I know.
As you're saying a joke, people are tweeting that the joke's not funny.
You know, are they looking at the ratings? You're blamed for the ratings.
The ratings have not been great, right?
But Bill, other than you, people laugh at him. Listen,
Kevin Hart. Oh, I know that. I know that.
I don't hate him. I don't think he's great. I don't think he's bad. He hosted SNL. I thought he was pretty funny.
He's done it a few times, two or three times.
He was pretty funny. Yeah. I play HQ Trivia. He was on there. He was
all right.
Pretty funny.
You won me over.
He was dirty.
Yeah.
He is kind of dirty. How's this going to work with, he can't be dirty during this.
Well, this article said that you're walking the smallest tightrope when you're hosting the Academy Awards because they want you to say things that are controversial, but at the same point, they don't want you to. It's almost impossible at this point. But for me, a guy who looks forward to this all year, it'd be like taking your kids to see Santa Claus and Danny Trejo is there instead of Santa Claus when you take them to see
him. My kids would love that, honestly.
I was given the news this morning by my wife, who told me in the same hushed tones you would tell someone that a loved one has passed away. She woke me up. She goes, Bill, I have some news you're not going to like. Oh, no.
Well, are you going to boycott? Because you watch every year. You're
going
to be forced to watch.
Have to watch. It's an important night.
Bertrand, $5 bet that he walks away liking Kevin Hart after this.
Oh, I'm not. No way.
It's impossible.
I think it's a terrible choice myself, and I don't have Bill's animus.
Who would you have put in, Steve?
Anyone but Kevin Hart. He doesn't have the right style, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
There has to be a little gravitas coming
into
it.
He does seem like a poor choice. Are they that desperate to find someone to host?
I guess they must be.
Well, I saw a headline yesterday, and I didn't know Cart was going to be announced, but before that it said why no one wants to host the Oscars.
That's the article I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's such a good article because it's so true that now guys are like, I have so much more to lose than to gain by hosting the Academy Awards. It shouldn't be that way. That should be a night that you want to do, you know? And they've made other choices. I got to be honest with you. The year that James Franco and Anne Hathaway
did it
was awful.
Kevin Hart will be better than them.
Hugh Jackman, incredibly talented man, should not be hosting the Academy Awards. Neil Patrick Harris does a great job with the Tonys.
Yeah.
Did not work at all as the host of the Academy Awards.
What was so great about Billy Crystal is he was a true entertainer.
Right.
So he could sing, dance. He was like Mr.
Right.
Variety Show, who was able to host it so impeccably.
The other thing that he had that a lot of the other hosts don't have is he had a team of writers that were so spontaneous that when something happened, the Jack Palance push-ups incident, they wrote him a dozen jokes right there on the spot that worked because it was so fast and so quick. It just, you know, it's hard to duplicate that. Kevin Hart hosting the Academy Awards.
Are you going to watch with the sound down?
Yes.
You could just DVR it and fast forward through all his parts.
I'm going to watch with a hammer in one hand. I'm just going to I'm going to hit myself over the head throughout the entire 3-hour broadcast.
I think the host gets too much blame, though. I mean, at the end of the... Has a host ever ruined the Academy Awards for you?
No.
I mean, hopefully you're talking about the award winners in the speeches,
but,
not the...
But the key to the good host is that first 15 minutes, you know, because they're setting the tone. They're coming out, you know, they always do a pre-produced piece at the very beginning and then the monologue. So that has to be good. And then they're interspersed throughout.
But just after that, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know. We'll see what happens. That's all I can tell you. All right, well, we'll take a break. News is next and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. When George W. Bush speaks at his father's funeral, we are going to air that today.
Yeah.
We were eavesdropping on the funeral that's going on right now and some levity.
Well, John Meacham is speaking. He's kind of an expert on the office of the presidency, and he was speaking, a longtime friend of former President Bush, and had the crowd laughing quite a bit, which I didn't think we would see too much of today, but...
Oh, I think you're going to see it a lot.
Do you think, Steve?
Yeah. You know, Meacham wrote a biography of the president, and I interviewed him for that biography just a few years ago. Yeah, great guy. Alan Simpson is going to speak a little bit later. And I don't know if you, Alan Simpson, it's been a long time since he's been on the national stage, but he was a Republican senator from Wyoming during the Bush years and Reagan years. And I think perhaps if you look up the word cantankerous in the dictionary, you would see Alan Simpson. He's a very conservative, very smart-witted sort of guy.
Steve was here.
And I think he's going to crack quite a few jokes here.
Did Alan Simpson at some point either run for president or was he in strong contention to and decided not to?
No, I don't think so. He never ran, certainly. And but he's just one of those, you know, and really, I don't know. I'll have to look up his age because he was...
He's got
to
be way up there,
way up there.
Yeah.
So good for him for being there. But yeah, I think he will be pretty interesting today. And you know, I think George W. is probably going to try to keep it light as well.
I agree, just so he can get himself through it, I would imagine. And
right.
I mean, funerals have always been like this, but I, you know, grew up Catholic, and I had a lot of great aunts that passed away when I was young. It seems like every weekend I was at Vance Funeral Home in Cicero and at St. Valentine's for Mass, and it was always somber, and funerals have changed so much. I mean, there are always these little anecdotes where you're so sad, but you laugh. You're laughing during it.
Isn't that better?
Yes.
I think it depends on the time circumstance. I was going to say time of life for the person who dies.
Yeah, that's true.
We know what time of life that is. But, you know, if it's an older person, a very old person, I think it's a different feel.
Is Sully at the funeral? Because I can't get over
this
service dog.
They have not shown the dog there. It's possible, I guess.
I suspect probably not.
But. He's been everywhere.
Steve, I was asking Wendy, and I would like your ideas on this as well. I know that at a funeral, you got to put your differences aside, but I would imagine there was an awkward glance or two between our current president and some of the former presidents and or their spouses, wouldn't you imagine?
Well, you know, I watched when he came in because, and I was talking to Steve Cochran about this. I mean, you know, it's a difficult time because...
Yeah.
Everyone is going to be watching him, and he was escorted along in front of the pew with all of the ex-presidents, or near the front of the pew, and he didn't shake any hands.
Who are you talking about?
President Trump.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Until they entered the pew at the end, Melania next to Barack Obama and the president at the end, and President Trump did reach over to Barack Obama and then to Michelle Obama, but not then beyond to Bill Clinton.
No, he didn't.
So there was no sort of exchange.
There was, I called it a Hello Newman moment where there was just kind of a glance at each other, but nothing was exchanged beyond the glance.
That's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, well...
It is a shame. It would have been interesting had Bill Clinton stood up and reached
his hand out. Yeah. Hillary looks amazing. I'm sorry. She looks really, really good. And everyone sitting together, and Donald Trump is holding it together. And it's kind of nice to see all those former presidents in the same pew.
There was no, when Senator McCain died a short time ago, there was a mandate that President Trump not attend that service. That didn't exist with this, right?
He was not invited. To the McCain.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But Senator McCain himself said before he died.
I said it more nicely.
He was asked not to come.
That wasn't the case here, no. I mean, and
they shouldn't have done that.
No, absolutely. This is a former president, a late president, and the current president belongs here, so I'm glad there wasn't any of that.
And I'm glad he made it. We all have to come together. I don't know what to do. I can't single-handedly help anything, but we all need to grow up.
Be honest, though. If you're, let's take the Clintons, for example. If you're the Clintons and you're sitting 8 to 10 yards away from the president and so much bad blood has been exchanged, I get it. It's a funeral. You have to show some tact. But it would still be very uncomfortable to see a person who you've had that many runs in with, right?
Yeah, but in my opinion, you're not thinking of that person.
No, of course
not. Thinking about what's going on.
No, I get it.
This is a national funeral, a state funeral.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you just have to
suck it up.
Deal with those things.
Yeah.
All right. Wouldn't be able to do it? All right, there's the answer.
It would not, if somebody had been that rude to me and they were sitting that close to me, it would make for a very difficult day for me.
I, honest to God, wouldn't even be thinking about that because I'd be listening to all the stories that were being told, and it's not about me. It's about showing respect for the person that has passed away.
I know.
You're a grudge holder.
No.
Is your blood pressure okay?
I don't have any blood pressure. I was tested and they couldn't find any blood pressure.
Zero over zero.
Zero over zero. It's first time ever.
My blood pressure is boiling over PETA. And listen, I mentioned Sully, the service dog for George H.W. Bush. I love this dog. The picture of this dog laying by the flag-draped casket was amazing yesterday in the rotunda as people with disabilities were walking by because of work that Bush did with the People with Disabilities Act.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Sully was part of that. I am obsessed with this dog. I love dogs, but PETA is causing my blood pressure to spike.
Can we take a quick break and then you can explain more?
Yes.
Is that the way to play it? All right.
PETA.
We'll come back and Betty Davis will explain why she's so upset. That's coming up next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Still to come on the show, Dane Neal, Brian Regan, and your chance to win some great steaks from Omaha Steaks.
All right. I love steaks. I'm not going to give up red meat. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to.
Right.
PETA in the news. Meat-based idioms like flogging a dead horse. Or beating a dead horse, I guess, is what I've heard more.
The phrase?
Yes.
Yeah, the phrase.
And taking the bull by the horns can be compared with homophobic and racist language. This according to the animal rights organization PETA.
Seriously?
Let me explain. Yes.
All right.
Just as it became unacceptable to use racist, homophobic, or ableist language. What is that?
Making fun of Cain and Abel.
All right. Phrases that trivialize cruelty to animals will vanish as more people begin to appreciate animals for who they are and start bringing home the bagels instead of the bacon.
All right. So, if you dissect these, a phrase like taking a bull by the horns, it refers to the rodeo, right? So they're not complaining about the rodeo so much here as the phrase representing the rodeo?
Well, it represents cruelty to animals if you take a bull by the horns.
So shouldn't they spend their time saying, let's close down rodeos and things like that, as opposed to the language?
I think they're on that, too. But now they just want to make it a part of everybody's life every day. So instead of take the bull by the horns, PETA is suggesting take the flower by the thorns.
I'm not going to say that. Are you?
No.
Are you paying someone for this?
I'm never going
to. Here's the idea.
Right.
Words matter.
They paid an ad agency to come up with that, Steve.
PETA says words matter, and as our understanding of social justice evolves, our language evolves along with it. All right, here's some more suggestions. You can stop using anti-animal language. Again, you know me. I love animals more than anything.
I know you do. More than anyone I know.
More than my family. I love animals.
I know that.
But this is crazy. You know how you say kill two birds with one stone?
Sure.
They would like you to say feed two birds with one scone. Instead of kill two birds with one stone, feed two birds with one scone.
I've had scones that would kill a bird.
Very heavy. Hard as a rock.
Who would do this? Even the biggest animal lovers in the world wouldn't do this.
All right, when you say, okay, I'll try this, I'll be the guinea pig, they want you to say, I'll do this, I'll be the test tube.
No. Absolutely not.
Wait, there's more.
Well, so like a book title like To Kill a Mockingbird, in which a mockingbird would potentially die.
Oh, they have to change that.
You can't have that.
To Thrill a Mockingbird.
To Thrill a Mockingbird. To Chill a Mockingbird.
I don't know, but they... I just,
that's very upsetting.
It's just crazy. And it goes back to the throwing paint on people who wear fur coats.
Yeah.
It defeats the whole purpose, because usually someone who has a fur coat is wealthy. They'll just go buy another one and let another animal or five have been killed.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
All right. Beat a dead horse. You're supposed to.
What would we say instead?
And what's the harm there? The horse is dead.
The horse doesn't feel it.
It's still mean to animals. You have to honor the dead horse. Not beat it.
Or but eat it.
Beat it or eat it.
They want you to feed a fed horse. But if it's fed, you can't
feed a fed horse.
What fed horse is going to eat feed?
They'd be making like the foie gras.
Yeah.
Force feeding horses. That's not right.
This isn't good.
That is terrible. I'm sorry. The foie gras situation. Put a tube in your mouth and let it rip with...
done that.
We've all done that.
Beer bongs in college. But other than that, no. I mentioned take the bull by the horns, take the flower by the thorns.
No one on the planet is going to say that.
Isn't there a PETA for botany? I mean, isn't somebody going to say you're hurting the flower?
Yeah.
And then instead of bring home the bacon, bring home the bagels. Can't fry it up in a pan?
We've been saying those phrases. I mean, I know we all evolve, hopefully, but those are phrases that are just in our heads. And animals aren't complaining.
Well, they...
Are dead horses complaining about beat a dead horse?
Because they're dead. You shouldn't be cruel to animals.
We all agree on that.
But these are
sayings.
But
these phrases, they're just not going to change anything. And to Steve's point, PETA went to some ad agency and said, work on these with us. Come up with more palatable ways to say these things.
They're not even good.
They're horrible.
They could have come up with better
things.
They're
terrible.
The worst one is feed a fed horse. Again, if the horse is fed, it's not going to take any food.
No.
All right. Well, there are bigger things to worry about because...
fish to fry?
I don't know
Can you say that still?
No.
What are we going to say instead?
A bigger dish to...
supply.
That's
just as good as theirs.
That's on par with the ones they came up with.
I'm embarrassed for you, PETA. I accept what you're doing, and I am anti-cruelty to animals. I am so with you on that.
Can you still say got his goat?
No.
Can't say that anymore?
Wouldn't hurt a fly?
Can't say that anymore.
I don't know. Do insects count in the PETA world?
They're animals, right? They're insects. They're in the insect portion of the animal kingdom.
It's at Disney. I've seen it.
Can we still have spelling bees?
No.
No. Spelling competition.
A spelling wee.
Right.
Right back.
There are all these stupid sayings now.
Spelling wee.
Really, their replacements are embarrassing. And you are adding to it. And
I know,
really, you should send them to PETA.
They would like our ideas more than their own ideas.
I think they're good ones.
Can you still count sheep when you're trying to sleep?
No.
That's over and done with.
I don't know what you'd count, though. And that's not hurting anyone.
No.
You just count a sheep. You're not hurting them.
Well, all of these are just phrases. No actual animals are harmed in the making of these phrases.
And kill two birds with one stone. No one is really going to do that.
No.
It's just an expression.
You just say it. You don't actually do it. It's hard to do. You're impossible. Your aim has to be so crystal clear.
I'm trying to think of all the other sayings. Another thing that is pretty scary is, you know, how many of us have been to a hotel and have taken a shower, and that you're so vulnerable.
In the shower in a hotel?
Yeah.
Because why?
Because you're naked?
Yeah.
It's someone else's...
Yeah.
I don't like to sit in a bathtub that has had someone else's butt in it. I mean, my family member's okay.
You need to tell them that when you're checking into the hotel.
I know they clean it, but it's just, I don't know. There's something, I just don't.
It's like a pig in a poke.
Stop it, PETA.
Steve, you can't say that anymore.
No, I'm sorry.
No.
So
you can't pick out on food anymore.
An employee filmed her taking a shower. And she sued the Hilton for $100 million. The bad thing is he not only taped her, but then he put the video of her showering on some X-rated site.
Well, that's what happened to Aaron Andrews.
Yes, that was brought up. But that was
but that
a person, that was like a stalker who did it. This is an employee of the hotel.
Hotel staff did it.
And then I was watching, I believe it was WGN News last night.
Yeah.
I was kind of flipping around. And they said that you should carry Post-it notes with you. Because,
and cover up your private parts.
No, not your private parts.
That's what I do.
Boy.
I put Post-it notes.
Either you have a really big Post-it note or those mini ones do the trick. I don't
know.
That's
hurtful.
But you're supposed, if you see something that looks like a camera, first of all, it probably is, but you're supposed to put a Post-it note on
it. If you see something that looks like a camera,
call operator.
Don't take a shower in that room. Right. That's your own fault if you go, wow, there, it says there's a camera right here in my bathroom.
The woman's from Chicago. She was in New York at the time. It was the Hampton Inn and Suites in Albany, New York. And she took a shower, and now she's suing hotel operator Hilton Worldwide for $100 million. He said, you know, I want money or I'm not taking this video down and I'll show it to everyone.
Wow.
The footage was taken in July 2015. She didn't find out until September when someone uploaded the video to a pornographic website and emailed her the link. That is the worst
That's
email
horrible.
To get.
I'd rather get a virus than that.
So yeah, she clicked on it. She saw her face and profile in a bathroom and she just started screaming. She thought her life would be ruined. She received another email from the same address later that night promising to expose the video, no pun intended,
mm-hmm.
as well as her full name, school, and place of employment unless she sent nude footage of herself. He already had nude footage.
Right.
Greedy.
Right. Here's a text, Wendy, that says, if someone working at a hotel wants to see me naked, then the joke's on them. All right.
Just be careful. Take a shower in a bodysuit.
Yes.
I don't know what else to tell you. Wear your bathing suit. Wear your bathing suit in there.
That's
all right, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. It's all happening in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and it's all happening right here at WGN.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dane Neal. You know Dane from On the Road with Dane. What was that noise?
That's just
that was a scary noise,
I think it was
Dane.
Just general excitement bubbling over. But with a just a tinge of respect for the situation in America.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. You have met former President Bush, the late President Bush, more than one occasion, right?
Yeah, just over, you know, you get a chance. Some of you, I used to do some D.C. speech writing and some other stuff, and friends at the White House, the executive chef, Christetta Comfort, the pastry chef, and some other people. And I ended up finding myself, and this was, I don't think about this very often, didn't mention it until he was in the news again, but as people kind of share their experiences and kind of him as a personality, you see him so much on a world stage and kind of parodied, and he went with it. Great, Dana Carvey.
Boy,
right?
Did he ever play he, along? He really did.
The Big Broccoli Lobby, maybe not fans, but I think the rest of America thinks that
broccoli.
I'm gonna do it. A lot of great things about him, and so this ended up being, it was like the morning of the inauguration, W's second inauguration. So, and so in the White House mess, which is kind of the lunchroom sort, but it's kind of big, not super big like a restaurant, but like a diner cafeteria thing, and you can go down there and order whatever at the tail end of a breakfast. He came bounding down the stairs. You mentioned off there like Tigger. It was exactly like Tigger, mm-hmm. bouncing out of tail. And so this was, I said it was 2000, you know, January of 2005, and. And he was like, hey there, you know, and he came down and he was just super excited as of course he would be, right? This is a big day for the family,
sure.
Certainly a fun and a festive day for him. And so he takes his hands on both sides of his coat and he whips his coat open. And his sport is dressed in a suit.
Yeah.
And the lining of his coat was an American flag.
Really?
Yep. And at the time I thought to myself, is that, should he be doing that? You know, I thought of like Hacksaw Jim Duggins with like a flag bandana or something. I'm like, is that a respectful way to do it? I'm like, well, hey, he's former president, he can do what he wants. But a fun guy, just a guy who was really, you know, super supportive and supportive of his family, obviously.
Of course.
But you know, just
that's excellent.
Like a fun and funny guy, right?
I wonder how many people got to see that the lining of his coat that particular day was the American flag. I don't remember it being anywhere.
He seemed pretty open to showing it off.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm guessing not very many. So I'm hoping that maybe people can hear that, and that's just an extra little insight into the fun side of HW.
Take a second to talk about that. He came out and said that he has nothing but disdain for broccoli, not a fan of broccoli.
And
And people are like, oh, you can't say that. You got to have vegetables. That's important for kids to hear that you like it. But he held true to that. He didn't like broccoli.
In this day and age, Bill, and you mentioned it, like with the opiate, you know, whatever kind of
the crisis
that we're going on, I think it's okay. I think there should be a list, maybe a whiteboard that you sit down with, thing it's okay to be against and hate, you know, bad, you know, cronyism, whatever you want to do, even different, different poisons, you know. But then, like broccoli, because then you've got to think if you're in the broccoli, let's say you're a broccoli farmer.
And you hear that.
And you're just like, come on. Right. Like, what do we got to deal with here? Right.
Is it good for business?
Yeah. I mean, Jelly Bellies, that's one thing you could say, like, you know, with moderation, right? Reagan with those.
Yeah.
So I love them, but maybe you don't eat so many if you want teeth, right? But broccoli, that's not a downside there.
All right. The holidays, of course, are here. Here they are. Welcome to the holidays.
Hi, holidays.
Wendy says hello. So you tell us, what can we do gift-wise when it comes to food and drink around the holidays?
This isn't necessarily a tell us. This is like a, let's, you know, come to kind of a meeting of the minds on alternatives. We have bucked some systems here during this segment, whether it's the pumpkin spice, whether it's, you know, the obligated turkey situations, you know. And I think on the gift side, when it comes to Christmas, you know, you have people who are food fans out there and want some foodie kind of gifts. I love the ideas of experiences, not necessarily as opposed. I'm not necessarily an either or guy, but you know, experiences, you know, to be able to kind of get stuff that you can either, you know, get out there and enjoy. Maybe you can learn, you can travel, you can see. As opposed to just, you know, a pot and pan set or a new ladle or a sweater.
I like the pot and pans. I like ladles. I don't like sweaters.
So hold the sweater, but I think it could be something that people should consider, whether it's some of those things that kind of keep the gift going, right? You know, for us.
That's a nice gift.
What, pots and pans?
I like that.
No, because you do use it all the time, and you think about how you got it. I get that. It's not like a sweater or a tie that sits there and maybe gets used.
Right.
Or maybe finds its way to the table during a garage sale. But I like the ideas of either things that you can look forward to or things that you can experience throughout the year. We talked about some of those kind of subscription services for the dinners, you know, whether it's the Blue Aprons or whether it is
HelloFresh.
Yeah. And they've all got kind of different niches that they stick to or some of the benefits. You know, it's all for, let's say, Blue Apron, it's a little bit more expensive. There's a little bit more on the prep time, but I think you can chalk it up to that you're learning some stuff. You'll do Moroccan chicken or lamb vindaloo or some other things that you may not necessarily do, whereas HelloFresh, you can choose your calories, and it's kind of like a step above Seattle Suttons. You know, the lady that comes on and says, like, you don't know how to make food. You don't know how to eat. I'm going to bring it to you. You just open it up, and you eat it from her. Here, you participate. You get involved. If you like to cook, this is cool for you.
It's fun.
We're monitoring the services for President Bush, and President Bush Jr. will be speaking soon. But while we're waiting for that to happen, what are your thoughts on Blank of the Month Club, Beer of the Month Club, Wine of the Month Club, Toast of the Month Club? What are your thoughts on these places?
Well, I love those for some of the reasons that we've shared. If you find something that your person, you know, your you know, gift recipient really enjoys, and then you can go ahead and kind of have that where they're going to get sort of a Christmas gift, like, you know, once a month. I think what you need to do is a little bit of research on it, make sure that the stuff that they get is good, you know, or something that'll fit. Maybe do some, you know, kind of a strategic questioning and that kind of stuff. But I think those are good. Whether it was like the Cigar of the Month Club from a long time ago, if you can find one that's doing it and kind of curates stuff from some of the best places, I think it's a good deal.
I have to say, years ago, my in-laws gave me a Beer of the Month Club subscription. So, of course, 12 packages
first
throughout the year.
Then Schlitz. Yeah. Everything was like at the TZ.
It was a cut-rate one. So, of the dozen, four were great, four were average, and four were horrible. I guess that's typical, right? That's what you're going to get.
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, especially if they're going to go with like an elevated.
It should be better.
Yeah, it should be better. So you check that out, because some they're obligated to take. You know, so maybe they're spending a little bit more money on those good ones, and then they're kind of making
throw some clinkers in.
On the clinkers.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, it's me, Bill, and I want to tell you that the best holiday gifts that you can send are Omaha Steaks, hands down.
Oh, you know,
are we switching gears?
Yes. Hold your thoughts. Right. Dane, sit tight, because I believe
we are about to switch gears. Here is George W. Bush remembering his father, George H.W. Bush.
And our families, thank you all for being here. I once heard it said of man that the idea is to die young as late as possible. At age 85, a favorite pastime of George H.W. Bush was firing up his boat, the Fidelity, and opening up the three 300-horsepower engines to fly, joyfully fly, across the Atlantic with the Secret Service boats straining to keep up. At age 90, George H.W. Bush parachuted out of an aircraft and landed on the grounds of St. Anne's by the Sea in Kennebunkport, Maine, the church where his mom was married and where he worshiped often. Mother liked to say he chose the location just in case the chute didn't open. In his 90s, he took great delight when his closest pal, James A. Baker, smuggled a bottle of Grey Goose vodka into his hospital room. Apparently, it paired well with the steak Baker had delivered from Morton's. To his very last days, Dad's life was instructive. As he aged, he taught us how to grow with dignity, humor, and kindness. And when the good Lord finally called, how to meet him with courage and with the joy of the promise of what lies ahead. One reason Dad knew how to die young is that he almost did it twice. When he was a teenager, a staph infection nearly took his life. A few years later, he was alone in the Pacific on a life raft, praying that his rescuers would find him before the enemy did. God answered those prayers. It turned out he had other plans for George H.W. Bush. For Dad's part, I think those brushes with death made him cherish the gift of life, and he vowed to live every day to the fullest. Dad was always busy, a man in constant motion, but never too busy to share his love of life with those around him. He taught us to love the outdoors. He loved watching dogs flush a covey. He loved landing the elusive striper. And once confined to a wheelchair, he seemed happiest sitting in his favorite perch on the back porch at Walker's Point, contemplating the majesty of the Atlantic. The horizons he saw were bright and hopeful. He was a genuinely optimistic man. And that optimism guided his children and made each of us believe that anything was possible. He continually broadened his horizons with daring decisions. He was a patriot. After high school, he put college on hold and became a Navy fighter pilot as World War II broke out. Like many of his generation, he never talked about his service until his time as a public figure forced his hand. We learned of the attack on Chichijima, the mission completed, the shoot down. We learned of the death of his crewmates, whom he thought about throughout his entire life. And we learned of the rescue. And then another audacious decision. He moved his young family from the comforts of the East Coast to Odessa, Texas. He and Mom adjusted to their arid surroundings quickly. He was a tolerant man. After all, he was kind and neighborly to the women with whom he, Mom, and I shared a bathroom in our small duplex. Even after he learned their profession, ladies of the night. Dad could relate to people from all walks of life. He was an empathetic man. He valued character over pedigree. And he was no cynic. He looked for the good in each person, and he usually found it. Dad taught us that public service is noble and necessary, that one can serve with integrity and hold true to the important values like faith and family. He strongly believed that it was important to give back to the community and country in which one lived. He recognized that serving others enriched the giver's soul. To us, his was the brightest of 1,000 points of light. In victory, he shared credit. When he lost, he shouldered the blame. He accepted that failure is a part of living a full life, but taught us never to be defined by failure. He showed us how setbacks can strengthen. None of his disappointments could compare with one of life's greatest tragedies, the loss of a young child. Jeb and I were too young to remember the pain and agony he and Mom felt when our three-year-old sister died. We only learned later that Dad, a man of quiet faith, prayed for her daily. He was sustained by the love of the Almighty and the real and enduring love of her mom. Dad always believed that one day he would hug his precious Robin again. He loved to laugh, especially at himself. He could tease and needle, but never out of malice. He placed great value on a good joke. That's why he chose Simpson to speak. On email, he had a circle of friends with whom he shared or received the latest jokes. His grading system for the quality of the joke was classic George Bush. The rare sevens and eights were considered huge winners, most of them off color. George Bush knew how to be a true and loyal friend. He nurtured and honored his many friendships with a generous and giving soul. There exist thousands of handwritten notes encouraging or sympathizing or thanking his friends and acquaintances. He had an enormous capacity to give of himself. Many a person would tell you that Dad became a mentor and a father figure in their life. He listened and he consoled. He was their friend. I think of Don Rhodes, Taylor Blanton, Jim Nance, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and perhaps the unlikeliest of all, the man who defeated him, Bill Clinton. My siblings and I refer to the guys in this group as brothers from other mothers. He taught us that a day was not meant to be wasted. He played golf at a legendary pace. I always wonder why he insisted on speed golf. He was a good golfer. Well, here's my conclusion. He played fast so that he could move on to the next event, to enjoy the rest of the day, to expend his enormous energy, to live it all. He was born with just two settings, full throttle, then sleep. He taught us what it means to be a wonderful father, grandfather, and great-grandfather. He was firm in his principles and supportive as we began to seek our own ways. He encouraged and comforted, but never steered. We tested his patience. I know I did. But he always responded with the great gift of unconditional love. Last Friday, when I was told he had minutes to live, I called him. The guy answered the phone, said I think he can hear you, but he hadn't said anything for most of the day. I said, Dad, I love you, and you've been a wonderful father. And the last words he would ever say on earth were, I love you too. To us, he was close to perfect, but not totally perfect. His short game was lousy. He wasn't exactly Fred Astaire on the dance floor. The man couldn't stomach vegetables, especially broccoli. And by the way, he passed these genetic defects along to us. Finally, every day of his 73 years of marriage, Dad taught us all what it means to be a great husband. He married his sweetheart. He adored her. He laughed and cried with her. He was dedicated to her totally. In his old age, Dad enjoyed watching police show reruns. The volume on high. All the while holding Mom's hand. After Mom died, Dad was strong, but all he really wanted to do was hold Mom's hand again. Of course, Dad taught me another special lesson. He showed me what it means to be a president who serves with integrity, leads with courage, and acts with love in his heart for the citizens of our country. When the history books are written, they will say that George H.W. Bush was a great president of the United States, a diplomat of unmatched skill, a commander-in-chief of formidable accomplishment, and a gentleman who executed the duties of his office with dignity and honor. In his inaugural address, the 41st President of the United States said this: "We cannot hope only to leave our children a bigger car, a bigger bank account. We must hope to give them a sense of what it means to be a loyal friend, a loving parent, a citizen who leaves his home, his neighborhood, and town better than he found it. What do we want the men and women who work with us to say when we are no longer there? That we were more driven to succeed than anyone around us, or that we stopped to ask if a sick child had gotten better and stayed a moment there to trade a word of friendship. Well, Dad, we're going to remember you for exactly that and much more. And we're going to miss you. Your decency, sincerity, and kind soul will stay with us forever. So through our tears, let us know the blessings of knowing and loving you, a great and noble man, the best father a son or daughter could have. And in our grief, let us smile knowing that Dad is hugging Robin and holding Mom's hand again."
Bill and Wendy, you've been listening to George W. Bush remember his father, George H.W. Bush, a beautiful tribute. You felt like you were listening to a close conversation about a son who loved his father, just talking about how much he loved him and what a wonderful man he was.
Absolutely right.
I felt sorry for Jeb. I did. At the one point when he said the last words my father ever spoke to me were, "I love you." And then I thought, well, what about Jeb?
I'm sure whatever their last encounter was
I know,
nice
but
as well. Yeah,
I get just emotional during these things.
But he really, I have to say, did everything he needed to do.
He did.
Said what he needed to say.
Right. And it was, honestly, I mean, there's no question that it came from the heart, but it was just a honest speech about how much a son loved his father.
No question
about
it. Pretty
sweet. And the respect that he had for him.
Yep.
Dane Neal's here. We'll continue talking with him after the news, and the news is coming up.
Tim, thanks so much. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. Sometime between now and the end of this hour, you'll have a chance to win a nice gift package from Omaha Steaks. Delicious stuff. Dane Neal is sticking around to talk about food gifts. Dane, where were we
exactly? When it comes to Omaha, I think you have to add, because you think about steaks, obviously known for the meat, the great meat, the value, right, mm-hmm. that you can get. But they make a pretty mean tartlet. And I think they should change the name to Omaha Tartlets. That's just my suggestion.
I'll suggest that to the Board of Regents over there. You were mentioning that experiences are a great gift. Food experiences. Define what that means exactly.
Okay, so it's kind of a double-edged sword. So I agree with Wendy on the, you know, let's do and not either or, because you want stuff that you can open and enjoy during the holiday, because it's one thing if all you get is envelopes filled with literature about things you're not doing for
but
months.
But you will in the future. right,
exactly. But there are some great ways to kind of, you know, give people things that they would love to do, whether it's, a trip to go ahead and experience some of the greatest food festivals. And certainly we can recommend some of those, whether it's New York City Wine and Food, or whether it's the Classic at Aspen or South Beach. You can get a little bit of a vacation in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the backdrop of not only great food, but a great food festival and meeting and interacting with some of your favorite personalities. So those are really cool. And some of the things that we'd suggest, and we'll have a link for some of those. Some things are a little more immersive. So Myron Mixon, you know, we've had him in.
Yeah.
He is the winningest man in barbecue. Just ask him. He'll tell you.
Yeah.
He'll be the first guy to say that. But he does his Jack's Old South is the name of his company and his dad's barbecue company. And they do their own cooking school. And so it's like a 3-day sort of like, you know, culinary boot camp.
All barbecue-related cooking or a little bit of everything?
Well, you know, I think the suggestion, but if you're thinking if there's going to be like a tartlet breakout session, that what you're thinking?
It's a great band name.
I'm thinking it focuses on, and here's the thing, too, is it focuses on the barbecue side, and it's the kind of thing you can get in there and you can learn to enjoy it and be able to experience a lot of those techniques and tricks and certainly flavors in your backyard, but also there are people that do that. They learn from him, and then they go off on the competition circuit and do that as well. So I'm guessing it's probably meat focused, but I'm sure there's some desserts kind of built into that. And it's over the course of 3 days, and you get a chance to do that. And it's not that expensive for some of these things. You know, I think for, let's say, a classic at Aspen, it might be $2,000 for the entire maybe 4 days, but it's kind of all inclusive in a bunch of different ways. You got your accommodations you have to take care of and getting out there, and you could certainly drive. It's a great drive through the mountains, but the events are food as well, so you're not thinking, okay, well now I got to go eat, because you're at these, you know, Grand Cruise or tasting seminars and things like that, so you get a chance to eat. Some are less expensive. You know, South Beach isn't all that expensive. We have a lot of great stuff here. You could even take a pizza making or, you know, cheese making class here at Eataly and have sort of that.
I gotta do that.
That would be fun.
You should do that if you guys would like to do that, and you should check out, you know, all the different things you can do, from whether it's the pairings, the cheese making, pizza making, and you leave there with, I think, some fun skills that you can do at home. So it isn't just you're going out to eat, you're enjoying something.
Right.
You're kind of learning things that you can either kind of add to what it is that you do. And then it goes all the way. So there's companies out there, and on the road with Dane at Gmail, if people want to email places that they would like to go.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of different things. But you can do anything from, you know, traveling to Tuscany and, you know, making raviolis at the foothills of a mountain, or going and, you know, foraging for truffles and all that kind of stuff. Almost anything you want to do, even if it's just one person. Let's say it's just you and you want to be one of those kind of solo world travelers, or you and a couple, or even a group and a family.
Yeah.
You can find ways to do it. And, you know, and I think, and Steve does those kind of things.
Steve Bertrand Travel,
right. You know, it's not necessarily focused just on the culinary, but I'm sure that's a huge part
of it,
of what they experience.
What do you think about these places that sell cookware that also a couple nights a week have classes? Have those been successful, do you know?
Well, I think in order to enhance whatever your retail situation, you know, whether it's like the is it like Butcher Block or whatever, you know, where they've got, where they'll host things. And I think anytime you can bring people in, and even, you know, one of the sponsors of our show, Backyard Barbecue Store, so it sells a bunch of barbecue equipment, but they have
Evanston,
in Wilmette.
In Wilmette,
which is very close.
Yeah.
Wilmette is a suburb of
just off Evanston. Of Green Bay Road.
Yeah. And they do those kind of events, Bill.
Packer fan.
Well, they'll bring people in, and they will they'll host, whether it's instructional things or maybe just different, you know, beers and tastings and pairings and things like that. And I'm sure on the retail side, at some point, people are looking around saying,
oh, yeah,
I'd like one of those. And maybe that's another way for them to enhance their business.
Definitely.
Jim was just asking me what he could get me for Christmas, because I'm sorry, if there's something I want, I usually get it throughout the year. You know, I really don't need anything, but that's a good idea to do like a cooking class together or something.
It is and oftentimes they'll have a little bit of wine in there, and they build in fun. So it isn't work. It's not like come and help someone move.
Right, do the
dishes.
Come and paint Larry's house. You know, it's not like that. They build it
in. That would be fun, too.
Painting Larry's house. There's so many restaurants, though, Chinese restaurants, French restaurants, German restaurants, that one day a week or one day every other week will have a class to teach you how to.
They do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are more places that are doing that. It depends on what you've got facilities-wise. It depends also on what you've got as far as personalities that work there. Sometimes if you've got, you know, if it's Rick Bayless, you've got yourself, you know, an entertainment space and a known personality that people would love to spend time with and learn from.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly has a lot to say. And then some places, you know, if they've got great facilities, they'll host that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When it comes to some of the other things, favorite stuff like Gold Belly. So think about that, goldbelly.com. This is we've all heard about, you know, whether it's like, hey, you can order, you know, your favorites from Chicago, right?
Sure.
If you move to Arizona,
your favorite pizza, your favorite chocolate hot dogs,
some White Castle, whatever kind of stuff, they'll put it in the back for you. Well, Gold Belly is gone, and they have kind of curated some of the favorite things from cities all around the country, and then they'll ship it to you. So, and that's a way to maybe build your own of the month club and also kind of world tour at the same time.
Good ideas, Dane. Very good ideas. That's Dane Neal. Dane, the next time people hear you this weekend?
Yes. Yeah, we'll be on 2 p.m. on the road with Dane. We've got an eclectic show. We're going to have Carla Hall on. We're going to talk cars, get this, and this kind of fits into the politics side. We're not going to talk a lot of politics. We'll talk some travel with Anthony Scaramucci is going to be on.
Mm-hmm. Really? The Mooch?
We're going to talk some cars and some food and some travel with
them.
That'll
be fun.
I think
good. Nice to see you. It's Dane Neal, everybody.
Thank you, Dane.
Thanks, Dane.
Thank you.
A little break, and then your chance to win a great gift package from Omaha Steaks coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bill, your heart has grown since last year, I got to tell you.
It sure has.
Last year, you were telling all the people about Omaha Steaks, and you didn't share one thing with me.
No, I decided not to, because I wanted to sample all the goodness on my own.
Selfish.
But then this year, it was told to me that I should share with you, and you tried it, and what'd you think?
Pretty amazing. Yeah. And I can't believe the value.
Oh, the value's amazing. Let's talk to Todd Simon. Todd is one of the owners of Omaha Steaks, fifth generation owner. Todd, how are you?
I'm great, and happy holidays.
Thank you, and to you.
Same to you. How did you get Bill to be so nice and share with me this year?
I'm not sure. We must have just put an amazing deal in front of him or something.
All right, Todd, here's a question I'm sure others have asked you. I get this package of Omaha Steaks in the mail, and I start opening it up, and I go, wow, there's a lot of food here, and it is. It's an incredible array of food, and all of it's delicious. So quickly tell us how you do it. It seems impossible, but you pull it off nicely. How?
Well, one of the things we really want to do is we want as many Americans as possible to be exposed to the amazing quality of Omaha Steaks for the holiday season. So we put an offer like this out there because we know people are going to give it a try, and we know that people are going to share it with their family and friends. And, you know, the result should be that, you know, 10 more people are going to order from us next year. So, you know, we try to, you know, we're really doing this to really get that, to get the great Omaha Steaks quality on as many tables as possible this holiday season.
Here's what's amazing to me with this family gift package that we're doing a deal on for the holidays, that if you priced it all separately, everything that you get in this package would be $215. Now, you guys had a special running with us last year for $195, but right now, everything that you get in the family gift package is just $49.99, and it tastes so good. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, you know, one of the, that features our top sirloin steaks, which is one of the leanest, most flavorful steaks. And then it also includes, you know, kielbasa, sausages, pork chops. You get four of our Omaha Steaks burgers, one of our most popular products, and then you get four more for free when you order on your deal. You also get some chicken fried steaks, some meatballs, potatoes au gratin, which is one of our most popular side dishes, and then caramel apple tartlets, which is my personal favorite for dessert.
Todd,
yeah, I have to heat those up.
It says that I should describe these kielbasa sausages, and I have been because it's accurate as snappy. Please explain what a snappy kielbasa sausage is for people who don't know.
Well, snappy just means that when you bite into it, it makes that little snap, that little click, you know, and there's just a difference between sort of a mushy sausage and a snappy sausage. And I think 10 out of 10 sausage eaters would agree that snappy's better than mushy.
I like snappy.
Yep, so good.
Todd, it seems like Omaha Steaks has been around forever and ever. You guys have been in business how long?
So we're 101 years old. Jeez. Omaha Steaks was founded by my great-great-grandfather in 1917. And so, you know, when you go to omahasteaks.com, you can find the whole history. Of course, we'd love for you to order some steaks as well. But you can find the whole history of the company, and you can see pictures of our family, and it's all there. But, yeah, we're the fifth generation in a family business.
What if someone in the family says, yeah, steaks are fine, but my true love is something else? How would the family treat that person?
You know, we actually have many examples of that. There's seven sort of cousins in my generation, and only two of us work in the business. So,
wow.
You know, people have chosen to take other courses. In fact, my cousin Dan is a TV reporter in San Francisco. And
but
like,
he only
so
does
we just have
steak,
a lot of different.
Dan only does steak related news stories. I've seen him on the news. It's the strangest thing.
It is really weird how he does that.
Yeah. We were just talking with Dane Neal, who handles a lot of the food type programming here on WGN, about gourmet gift giving at Christmas, and Omaha Steaks plays nicely into that, don't you?
We do. You know what, we've done a lot of research on this, and we know that 60% of consumers plan to shop online for their holiday gifts, and when people shop online, they're looking for experiences lately, not just things. And when you give a gift of Omaha Steaks, you're not giving just like meat in a box. You're giving people the opportunity to have an amazing experience with family and friends around the table. And it's easy and it's convenient. And there's so much holiday cooking going on, you know, that's really elaborate, that sometimes it's nice to just kick back and do something easy like an Omaha Steaks package.
Online, the presence of online has changed business dramatically, hasn't it?
It really has. Although, you know, you can shop lots of different ways with Omaha Steaks. You can go online to omahasteaks.com. You can call our 800 number, which is 800-228-9055. You can even, if you're a business and you've got like a large volume purchase, you can buy business gifts for Omaha Steaks. If you just email us at b2b@omahasteaks.com, we can take care of gifts for your clients and your customers. So we've got lots of different ways to make sure that people get Omaha Steaks on their table this season.
All right. You have been kind enough to give us these family gift packages, not just to let people know that they're a gift option, but also some giveaways this week. Right now, we're giving one away, the family gift package, everything I'm about to mention, 4 hand-cut aged top sirloins, 2 premium pork chops, 4 chicken fried steaks, 4 Omaha Steak burgers, 4 snappy kielbasa sausages, a bunch of all-beef meatballs, 4 perfectly brown potatoes au gratin, 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, and then 4 additional burgers thrown in for free. Todd, you're the boss. It's up to you. You pick a number between 1 and 20.
Wow, I'm going to pick Lucky 13.
Lucky 13 at 312-981-7200 wins everything I just mentioned from Omaha Steaks. Todd, we really appreciate this, and really, it really is one of your best gift-giving options. I've given Omaha Steaks. I've received Omaha Steaks. Everybody's happy when it comes to your product.
Well, thank you so much, and happy holidays, and good luck to the winner out there.
To caller 13. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
All right.
Todd bye Simon, bye. the president of Omaha Steaks.
And if you don't win, if you're not caller 13, seriously, for $49.99, all the things that Bill mentioned. But here's the thing you did forget to say.
What did I say?
You have to enter special code Bill in the search bar at omahasteaks.com to get this great offer.
That's true. Don't forget to do that.
All right.
Do we have a winner?
Do we want to talk to the winner?
Yeah, put him on.
Winner, winner, steak dinner. Omaha Steak dinner.
Winner, winner, Omaha Steak dinner. Who is this, line 5?
It's Jim.
Jim, have you ever had steak before?
Yeah.
You did? Guess what? You're going to have a ton more soon.
Okay, great.
Yeah, you are the winner of our Omaha Steaks gift package, the family gift package. You don't have to put my name in the search bar. We're just going to send it to you. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, it sounds great. Thank you.
All right, stay on the line. Happy holidays.
You're such a good man. You're the Santa of meat.
Jim has had... Well, thank you for saying that. I'm going to have my business card changed to that now. All right. We'll take a little break. We'll come back and close things off. We're headed toward the stream for the bonus hour. We'd love to have
however,
you. Yeah,
however, we are not going to be on the stream until the funeral's over, from my understanding.
Right.
And it is still going right now, the state funeral of George Herbert Walker Bush. So join the stream. We'll be on after the events of the funeral.
Correct.
Also coming up on WGN 720, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon, all from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.